All rise. Hearing, hearing. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh of all ye have business with the Honorable Court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this Honorable Court.
Thank you. You may be seated.
Good morning, everyone. We will begin with introductions from the court. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and now, by seniority, as to order of service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
I'm Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning. I am Jeff Funk.
I'm Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
And John Freidenberg.
Thank you, members of the court, and we need also to introduce this morning Allie Stewart, our bailiff, and our special guest bailiff of the day is Landon Schoonover from Southeast High School, and he is here with the business law class from Southeast High School, and they are mostly on what is my right side of the courtroom, and their teacher is Stephanie Olson, and we want to especially welcome you this morning, and thank you for being here. And with that, we will go to our first case of the day, which is State versus Bixby. Mr. Island, good morning to you. And yeah, you may approach. And Ms. Vincent, good morning to you. Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Then, Mr. Island, you may proceed.
What we're faced here with is the two-pronged question of what the government has to prove to meet their burden before a prior can even be rebutted by the defendant. In this instance, we have two priors that are offered that offer a sentencing journal only with no dates of offense. And while the state argued that there's a presumption of regularity, which we do agree with, it does not include the statute of limitations. Statute of limitations is a waiverable affirmative defense, and there are multiple tolling issues. So our position is that when you look at the judgment that's before the court or the journals, they have to show that the offense was committed within the 15 years prior to the current offense. And there must be something in it. And I understand State versus Miller is a court of appeals case, but in that case, they talked about the complaint. You look at the complaint, shows DUI, then we can figure out it's a DUI, and then the burden would shift to the defendant to rebut it, much like in, I think, State versus Mitchell. The problem is, in this case, we don't have a complaint. So when we look at the South Dakota exhibit, the problem with that is it says DUI. Is that enough? And in Miller, they seem to indicate we need to look at a complaint to see if this kind of looks like a DUI as we define it. So there's a lot of, I think, issues that kind of intertwine with each other in this case.
So what did, in regard to the 15-year issue, what did the district court say about that?
The district court said that it had to be within 15 years because it would be just inconceivable that it had taken 7, 9, 10 years to sentence someone. The other thing is they looked at a case number in the one of the priors. And I think the problem with that is there's no evidence of what that case number means. In addition, a case number that we use here doesn't necessarily reflect when the date of offense is. That's a date of filing. And there are multiple reasons why cases get filed long after the offense or how things work themselves out. So
what's
you have a, to make
what's
some
example then a DUI case?
Well, I would say there's a charge and the person is a fugitive from justice and they don't get brought back for multiple years. There could be a plea. I've seen cases where there's plea, there's old cases that you kind of end up saying, hey, we'll plead to this, you get rid of those, but you're going to have to waive whether it's a statute of limitations or something
with
like that.
With regard to the Nebraska case only, setting aside the South Dakota case, what I think we understand the first two numbers on there is a year.
Well,
what would be something that would toll someone from not charging beyond the statute of limitations for a DUI case?
Right. Would be fugitive, well, not fugitive from justice, I think could be one of those things. If somebody had left the state and was not accessible, if they had filed it and there was a bind over of some type, that first case may have waited a number of years to lead to the second case. Or it could have been an old case that had a plea resolution. Really, the best practices is, and I think Miller seems to indicate that, is after the complaint, after the judgment of conviction, then we know these things, right? In this case, we don't have that, and we're left to guess. So the state doesn't meet their initial burden of production when they do that.
What is the state's initial burden?
What do they have to show? They have to show that there's a DUI conviction or similar, because out of state, within the previous 15 years. And if they prove that by a preponderance of the evidence, they've met their burden, the burden shifts to the citizen to then rebut those presumptions as whether or not it's a similar, whether or not they had counsel, those issues.
So are what we're asking is the question, is it more likely than not that this offense occurred within the past 15 years? Is that the question for the state's burden?
I guess I hadn't looked at it that way, but that may be appropriate, more likely than not. But a sentencing journal doesn't tell us whether it's more likely. It has to be on evidence of the date of offense. And while the exact date is not necessary, it does have to be within that previous 15 years. And this case here is, this case is almost 6 years old now, which is unusual, but doesn't mean these things don't happen, where cases take a long time to process through the system and be resolved at times. Sorry, it looked like you were going to ask a question.
I'm trying to pose it and not appear too mystified. Back on the burden of proof.
Right.
With respect to priors.
Yes.
Could you explore that?
Yeah.
Is it an element of the offense? Is it an enhancement? Could it be that it had to be beyond a reasonable doubt?
You know, I hadn't contemplated that because the case law that I was reading was all preponderance of the evidence that it was an enhancement enhancement that they approved by preponderance of the evidence that it was a DUI conviction within the previous 15 years. And
if the evidence of enhancement fails, where does that leave the defendant in terms of the conviction?
Then it's not a usable prior conviction for purposes of enhancement if they don't meet their initial burden of proof.
Right.
If they do, then that's when the burden shifts. And that's why I think this case presents both issues. There's the, did they meet their burden? And then if they did we rebut it sufficiently?
Well, preponderance of the evidence,
yes.
That standard is exactly the same as what Judge Papik articulated,
right.
More likely than not.
Right.
It's not beyond a reasonable doubt. We're not talking about the underlying offense for which the person stands convicted. We're talking about enhancing or not enhancing for punishment.
Correct. I wasn't arguing.
Yeah, I don't think
doubt.
You are. And
okay.
I just want to be sure that there's
but
no...
I beg your pardon. So the failure to enhance leaves your client where?
The failure to enhance would make it a first offense. He's already been convicted of the underlying offense. He has to be sentenced on DUI. The question is, where is he sentenced on? Is he sentenced as a first, a second, or a third?
What have we said about sentencing being invalid and remand and re-enhancement hearings? What have we said in that nature?
Well, it is remanded for further sentencing, which seems...
Further sentencing or further enhancement?
For a new enhancement hearing. And
if we threw in with you, what would happen in this case? You said these convictions weren't valid. State didn't provide sufficient evidence to warrant a DUI third sentencing. What happens to this case?
It gets remanded, I believe, for a new enhancement hearing.
Did we say something like that in Valdez? Or?
I don't remember the case.
But
that's
the logic, your logic.
The logic, yes. I apologize. I wasn't thinking about those issues.
They can have another chance to prove up that it was in fact within the 15 years.
It does. It feels unfair. If the court wants to address that and look at that again, I'd be more than happy to do that. But at least the status of the law at this point, I think, is it's set back for a new enhancement.
Don't we here have at least an implicit finding of the district court that it was more likely than not that this prior offense occurred within 15 years?
Yes, I think we do have that. He says that he believes it had to have occurred within 15 years, but I'm saying there's no evidence in the record to allow him to come to that conclusion. That's the problem, is he's having to guess, and we don't allow guesses for purposes of evidence.
You characterize it as a guess. I suspect your opposing counsel is going to characterize it as an inference. You want to talk about that before your time runs out?
Well, I think it's still an improper inference because, once again, you're having to suggest that a date of sentencing tells you the date of offense and it has to be some type of reasonable connection when I've had multiple cases over the years where they are older, they date back in time. I've had ones that we've had to go figure out what the law is because it's been so long. These are things that do occur, and we can't assume that that didn't occur in this case. So that inference would be improper, and it would be, from my perspective, guesswork.
The state contends that you take into the statute of limitations and can kind of backdate this to within the 15 years.
And that was my point earlier. First of all, they say it's the presumption of regularity, which I don't think includes the statute of limitations because that's an affirmative defense. And affirmative defenses can be waived. And there's the tolling statutes, which I talked about early on because I wanted to make that clear. If you're a fugitive from justice, you've disappeared. I've had other cases like that as well, where it takes a long time before that person faces the charge because they moved out of state not to decide to extradite, or sometimes they fled. And so I think that is an issue. A statute of limitations doesn't tell you when that date of offense was. It's, once again, it's a guess. That's why we need the complaint. And I think Miller kind of suggests that's what we need, is at least something that says DUI, for at least for the foreign state of the complaint. We look at the complaint, and then we look at the conviction.
For your time, well, maybe it has run out. The South Dakota DUI, the information or the journal entry seems to indicate a different statute than the DUI statute.
Yes.
What do we do with that?
Well, I think under the Van, and I think Tepper says it also, that this presumption of regularity actually applies to that sentencing journal that has the right statute, and that the court knows what statute the DUI that they're sentencing under. And that statute says, if you compare the two elements, the elements are clearly not the same.
That statute doesn't have any elements, though, does it? It's a sentencing statute.
Well, it appears it may be, but we don't know that. That's what the statute that was offered and the evidence presented at the hearing is. I understand that may be a reasonable interpretation, but when we look at the statute, which is cited in the complaint, or not the complaint, the journal, which is what we have to look at, and under the presumption of regularity, we look at that's the statute that they use for DUI. Even if that meets the sufficient standard, DUI, is that enough? But even if it is, then you look at the statute, you presume South Dakota judges know their laws and what law the person was convicted under, and you then compare those statutes.
And they were convicted under a sentencing statute?
I understand. It does seem a little odd, but it's not for us to figure out what statute it was under. And maybe if we had a complaint that made that clear, that might have changed or clarified it. But I think we're stuck with the evidence in the record that shows what the statute that they said that was the conviction was under. You know, that was what the judgment was for. So I'm stuck with the journal. And I think the court is stuck with the journal too, even if you're right, it does seem to have some issues as to determine what that's for. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Vincent, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Melissa Vincent, and I represent the Appalachia, the state of Nebraska. Bixby claims the district court erred by finding his prior DUI convictions were valid for enhancement purposes. I disagree. The two priors at issue are in Exhibits 30 and 31 and consist of the sentencing orders in each case. basically claims the district court erred by finding those offenses occurred within 15 years of the current offense, since the date he was sentenced provides no indication as to the date the offenses occurred. And while that may be true, the date the charges were filed does. As this court noted in State v. Lloyd, which is a case from 2005, the state is required to prove the charges were filed within the applicable statute of limitations, and that obligation, coupled with the presumption of regularity and validity that attaches to final judgment, or with that, a court can safely assume that the charges were timely filed. And applying that analysis here, it's clear that Bixby committed his charges or his DUIs within 15 years of the current offense. If there were some extenuating circumstance that pushed one or both offenses outside the 15-year period, and that information was uniquely within Bixby's knowledge, and under Garcia, it was incumbent upon him to produce it. He didn't. Accordingly, the district court did not err in finding his prior DUIs were valid for enhancement purposes. However, if this court disagrees and the state submits the proper remedy here, is to remand the cause to the district court for a new enhancement hearing.
What's the state's burden?
His preponderance of evidence to show that it was a DUI and that it was committed within 15 years, but we don't have to prove of the current offense.
Is a preponderance standard consistent with Apprendi versus New Jersey, that any facts that increase the prescribed range of punishment or elements that have to be submitted
prove
beyond reasonable doubt?
No, because that's the fact of a prior conviction is exempt from that rule.
Under Apprendi, it's been recognized as exempt.
Yes. Right. So the preponderance standard is perfectly permissible in this scenario.
Ideally, what should the state be offering at these enhancement hearings?
Well, I think ideally you would offer the complaint along with the sentencing order or the judgment itself. I gather from reading the Court of Appeals opinion regarding the mistrial that this prosecutor was relatively inexperienced and this is like his second DUI. So he may not have quite understood what he needed to prove there, because he did make a comment on the record about, well, I don't know what I do beyond providing this judgment.
But the previous trial, he offered testimony about prior convictions. Is that correct?
He may have. Yeah, I don't remember.
That's why there was a mistrial.
Yeah, I don't remember all of the details, but I think he may have been referring to the judgments of conviction. I don't think he was talking about the specific, got into the specifics of the, you know, of the offenses and when they occurred.
Seems like a lot of heavy lifting by the trial judge to figure out what these are supposed to be. At some point, have we watered down the burden of proof to next to nothing if we have to have the trial judge go out and do all this extra determinations and review of other statutes and statute of limitations and things of that nature?
Well, not necessarily, but I think here the district court, at least as I construe it, he's like, look, that's unreasonable. Nobody waits 7 to 9 years to prosecute a DUI. I mean, even under some of the scenarios that Mr. Island offered, you're not going to have that much of a lag. And as a practical matter, DUIs often come with things like license revocations. And so time is of the essence. You want to get these cases tried. You want to get them resolved. And yeah, they may get drug out for various reasons, but 7 to 9 years is kind of ridiculous. And so here the court said, well, this is unreasonable. And even
is
if you
unreasonable
look,
standard?
Well, I think it's
somewhere in the case law or the statute say it's just unreasonable to assume it wasn't.
No, but I think that's more of the inference. And that's where I'm getting into the statute of limitations, because while he may not have expressly said statute of limitations, one of those was a Nebraska conviction. And it was for a Class W misdemeanor. And I assume that the district court is familiar with the statute of limitations for Class W misdemeanors. And he says, hey, this has a 10. This case was filed in 2010. I know that in Nebraska, you can't wait 7 years to prosecute a DUI. It's 18 months.
What do we know about the 2010 filing? Do we know it by the case number? Is that the
yes.
only one?
Yeah.
What's in the record, or what does the court take judicial knowledge of to know that a 2010 case number means it's filed in 2000? Is that just a general, everybody knows it?
I would assume so. I mean, I think, you know, that's a public record. And I think, you know, courts have general knowledge of how these operate. You know when you see a case number, you know, you know that it, what
in
it means
Nebraska.
It's filed in this year.
In
sure.
Nebraska.
Right.
In we Nebraska, don't know about South Dakota.
No, but the South Dakota statute or the sentencing order in South Dakota basically says, hey, this information was filed on November 27, 2012. So I don't have to guess there. You know, and sure, the court didn't know that, you know, they have a lengthy statute of limitations for misdemeanors. But still, I think if you're just going off of, you know, 9 years, that's... there's no way that someone's going to wait 9 years. I just think it's unreasonable. And so I'm saying, and part of the reason that I'm doing this is I'm trying to avoid sending this back for, you know, round four. This case has been up here 3 times. He committed this offense 5.5 years ago. And the reality is, if this falls through, this goes back for another enhancement hearing. He goes out and fetches the complaint, and we see that, oh, in fact, they were within 15 years. And so now we've wasted all of these time, you know, time
but,
resources.
But to be fair, the errors that led to it have been by the state, correct?
Well, it could be. It could be. But again, that's what I'm trying to do here.
Such a thing shouldn't be held against the defendant in this situation.
Well, no. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I think when I look at this, I'm like, well, you know, if you look at the statute of limitations and we have this presumption of regularity and validity that attaches to these, I think we can make certain assumptions about it. And under Garcia, it's like, okay, well, if there's something strange that happened here, something odd or out of the ordinary, it's incumbent upon the defendant to produce that evidence, not the state. This is set up to make the state's burden easier to tag repeat offenses.
Well, there's still a burden.
There's
still a responsibility.
Exactly. There is. But I think it was met here. And again, if you want to remand it for a new enhancement hearing, I'm not opposed to that because I'm convinced that they can prove it up. And so I think we're going to end up back in the same place where we started.
What about that South Dakota statute that's cited in the journal entry that references a sentencing statute for a DUI?
Well, frankly, I don't think we even need to look at that statute, given the fact that both offenses in the order, they're identically termed. They're both DUIs, first offenses, both class one misdemeanors. I don't think we need to look beyond that. Clearly, it's an offense for DUI, and I can't remember which case exactly, if it's Taylor or Garcia. One of them that says, look, we don't have to look, you know, at those things initially. It's not the state's burden to prove that the elements are identical at the outset. And it gets into the one case that, where there was the Colorado conviction for the DWAI versus the DUI.
The cases kind of say they remind you of a DUI.
Well, sure. I mean, but there's some question. If they're not called the same thing, but if they're both driving under the influence, it's both first offense, I don't think we need to look any further. He was the one that went out and got the statute. And then we look at it and see that it's a penalty provision, and it clearly refers to the DUI statute.
Well,
and so I think the court...
Journal entry uses the statute for the sentencing.
Exactly. But when you pull
it's
up that...
It's not the defendant that went out and got the statute. It was the court that was using it in its journal entry.
Well, it did, but the defendant is the one that went out and got the statute that was listed in the sentencing, and he's the one that introduced it as an exhibit in Exhibit 32, and I don't think the court can look at that and say, okay, well, clearly this is a conviction for under a different statute, and they say, but you're right, there are no elements,
so the trial court in Nebraska can then go out and look at the statute for DUI in South Dakota and see if the elements are the same?
I don't see why not. I mean, you can take judicial notice of laws in other jurisdictions. Those are publicly available. I don't see any reason why the court couldn't.
We assume that the trial court did that in this instance?
He did do it because he went through the proper analysis, and I did it as well, and it's they prohibit the same conduct.
It references, the journal entry does reference conviction for driving under the influence first offense, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It just doesn't reference the statute.
It references the penalty provision, which then, of course, says, okay, if it's a first offense for violation of this statute, so it makes clear that that statute is the DUI statute. And so the court said, okay, well, if we're going to match elements, I'm going to look at the elements of the DUI statute in South Dakota. I'm going to look at the one in Nebraska. And guess what? They prohibit the same conduct. I'm done. And so that's what happened here. So I think, you know, really the only issue here, for me at least, is, you know, whether the state established the date of the offenses, you know, by a preponderance of the evidence. And again, I think you could rely on the statute of limitations. It's not going to work in every case, but I think it works here. You know, but if it goes back for an enhancement hearing, well, for another enhancement hearing, that's fine.
Is that well-settled law?
Yes, it is.
We said that in multiple different scenarios?
Yes, and I think that I can't remember, was it King? There was one case, and it may have involved a habitual criminal, but that thing went back up and down like three or four different times on an enhancement. And so there's really no limit as to when that can happen. And ideally, yes, you'd like the state to get it right the first time. But, you know, like I said, I think this prosecutor was a little inexperienced. I think maybe this was his first DUI. He hadn't had any experience. He didn't know what he was supposed to do beyond getting the sentencing order. Maybe he was thinking the same thing. Hey, these are 7 and 9 years old. There's no way that these offenses were committed before 2003. You know, but, and I suspect that if this goes back, the state will be able to prove it. He won't have any evidence coming in saying, hey, wait a second, I was a fugitive and, you know, that's not going to happen. And it, realistically, if that were the case, he probably would have raised it at the enhancement hearing anyway and said, well, you can't use these. So this is just another instance where someone is taking issue with an enhancement when there's really no basis. You know, it's like, well, you're not going to get anywhere with this particular error because you know that these offenses were committed within the 15-year period, and you know that if this goes back, the state will be able to prove it.
Does the defendant have some burden to present evidence that would show the conviction invalid?
Yes.
Have we said that in the past?
Yes, in Garcia. Garcia and I think, you know, Brooks to a lesser, or not Brooks, but Brown to a lesser extent. The court went through that analysis and said, okay, well, you know, we just compare, we do that, you know, comparison initially. If they appear to match up, then if there's any idiosyncrasies or other things that might render that conviction invalid for some other reason, factually perhaps, might, then that's incumbent upon the defendant to raise that. We can assume that they're fine until they show that it's not.
You would agree that it might be good encouragement in an opinion, even if we side with you, to suggest that prosecutors include the charging documents along with the conviction?
Absolutely. I mean, that would certainly be my preference. It didn't happen here, obviously, but I mean, that, you know, ordinarily I think that does happen in the main. It just, in this case, it didn't. And the question is, does it need to go back? So, anyway.
The applicable version of 60-6197.02, which was the enhancement statute, are you familiar with that statute?
Yes.
It says the court's certified or authenticated copy shall be prima facie evidence of such prior conviction. And then sub 3 goes into saying that how it can be challenged by the defendant.
Sure.
Do you know how long that has been in effect, that language for that statute?
Are you talking about subsection 3?
Subsection 2 and 3.
I'm not sure. As I seem to recall, it was cited in one of the earlier, maybe Taylor. Taylor or Garcia, I know it was pretty early on. It was a while ago.
The reason I ask is I want to know the cases that we've discussed today, are they referring to this statute or a different version of this statute?
Well, they're referring to this statute. I mean, there's been discussion.
This version of it?
Yes, this court has analyzed this statute under this language and been using that mitigating factor to the attention of the court prior to sentencing language for years. So I can't tell you, I can't give you the precise date, but I know that it has been because I've read those cases recently.
Thank you.
So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
There you go.
Counsel, that concludes arguments in State versus Bixby. And again, thank you. And you are excused. And the next case of the day is State versus Anderson.